Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 16th of January 2016. My name's Hereward Fenton. Great to be with you today. Well, we seem to be at this point in time as we go to air at the beginning of another grand economic collapse on a global scale. Of course, it's too early to say really what the unfolding reality will be. We'll know more in a few days, but since the beginning of the year, stocks have been tumbling, the Chinese economy has been faltering, and that has really picked up speed in the last week. And on Friday the 15th of January, there was a massive fall in stock market values. And we are now just seeing the fallout from that on Saturday the 16th of January. The predictions are, and this is coming from very, very mainstream sources, the kind of sources that generally water down and dampen down people's fears. I've got articles from CNBC, a recession worse than 2008 is coming. Oil credit crunch could be worse than the housing crisis. Another part of the unfolding situation at the moment is that oil prices continue to drop, and they've now dropped below $30 per barrel. And just reading an article here from CNBC, oil and gas companies borrowed heavily when oil prices were soaring above $70 a barrel. But in the last 24 months, they've seen their values and cash flows erode ferociously as oil prices plunge. And that has made it hard for some to pay back that debt. This could lead to a massive credit crunch like the one we saw in 2008. With our economy just getting back on its feet, timing could not be worse, especially in an election year. And the other article here, recession worse than 2008, and this is from just yesterday. The S&P 500 has begun 2016 with its worst performance ever. This has prompted Wall Street apologists to come out in full force and try to explain why the chaos in global currencies and equities will not be a repeat of 2008. Nor do they want investors to believe this environment is commensurate with the dot-com bubble bursting. They claim the current turmoil in China is not even comparable to the 1997 Asian debt crisis. This is an article by Michael Pento on CNBC.com. Indeed, the unscrupulous individuals that dominate financial institutions and governments seldom predict a downtick on Wall Street, so don't expect them to warn of the impending global recession and market mayhem. But a recession has recurred in the US about every 5 years on average since the end of World War II, and it has been 7 years since the last one. More importantly, the average market drop during the peak to trough of the last six recessions has been 37%. That would take the S&P down to 1,300, if this were to be just of the average variety. But this one will be worse. A major contributor for this imminent recession is the fallout from a faltering Chinese economy. The megalomaniac communist government has increased debt 28 times since the year 2000, taking that total north of 300% of GDP in a very short period of time. Now that this debt bubble is unwinding, growth in China is going offline. The renminbi's falling value, cascading Shanghai equity prices and plummeting rail freight volumes all clearly illustrate that China is not growing at the promulgated 7%, but rather isn't growing at all. The problem is that China accounted for 34% of global growth, and the nation's multiplier effect on emerging markets takes that number to over 50%. Therefore, expect more stress on multinational corporate earnings as global growth continues to slow. But the debt debacle in China is not the primary catalyst for the next recession in the United States. It is the fact that equity prices and real estate values can no longer be supported by incomes and GDP. Now that the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing and zero interest rate policy have ended, these asset prices are succumbing to the gravitational forces of deflation. The median home price to income ratio is currently 4-1, whereas the average ratio is just 2.6. Therefore, despite record low mortgage rates, first-time home buyers can no longer afford to make the down payment. And without first-time home buyers, existing homeowners can't move up. Likewise, the total value of stocks has now become dangerously detached from the anemic state of the underlying economy. The long-term average of the market cap to GDP ratio is around 75, but it is currently 110. The rebound in GDP coming out of the Great Recession was artificially engineered by the Fed's wealth effect. Now the re-engineered bubble in stocks and real estate is reversing and should cause a severe contraction in consumer spending. Nevertheless, the solace offered by Wall Street is that another 2008-style deflation and depression is impossible because banks are now better capitalized. However, banks may find that they are less capitalized than regulators now believe, because much of their assets are in treasury debt and consumer loans that should be significantly underwater after the next recession brings unprecedented fiscal strain. But most importantly, even if one were to concede financial institutions are less leveraged, the startling truth is that businesses, the federal government, and the Federal Reserve have taken on a humongous amount of additional debt since 2007. Even household debt has increased back to its 2007 record of $14.1 trillion. Significantly, business debt during that time frame has grown from $10 trillion to $12 trillion. The total national debt boomed from $9.2 trillion to $18.9 trillion, and the Fed's balance sheet has exploded from $880 billion to $4.5 trillion. Banks may be better off today than they were leading up to the Great Recession, but the government and Fed's balance sheets have become insolvent in the wake of their inane effort to borrow and print the economy back to health. As a result, the federal government's debt has now soared to nearly 600% of total revenue. And the Fed has spent the last 8 years levering up its balance sheet 77-1 in its goal to peg short-term interest rates at 0%. Therefore, this inevitable and by all accounts brutal upcoming recession will coincide with two unprecedented and extremely dangerous conditions that should make the next downturn worse than 2008. First, the Fed will not be able to lower interest rates and provide any debt service relief for the economy. In the wake of the Great Recession, former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke took the overnight interbank lending rate down to 0% from 5.25% and printed $3.7 trillion. The Fed bought longer-term debt in order to push mortgages and every other form of debt, to record lows. The best the Fed can do now is take away its 0.25% rate hike made in December. Second, the federal government increased the amount of publicly traded debt by $8.5 trillion and ran $1.5 trillion deficits to try to boost consumption through transfer payments. It is my belief, and this is a reading from the article here, it is my belief that in order to avoid the surging cost of a debt service payments on the public and private sector levels, the Fed will feel compelled to launch a massive and unlimited round of bond purchases. However, not only are interest rates already at historic lows, but faith in the ability of central banks to provide sustainable GDP growth will have already been destroyed, given their failed 8-year experiment in quantitative easing. So that's actually quite a good roundup and a very realistic look at what is happening. Now, the White House has already taken an interest in what is going on. And I'll just play to you a clip here, a short clip from CNBC again, from the White House in response to the market crash that occurred on Friday. Here we go.
Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary, is briefing reporters at the White House right now. Just a few minutes ago, he was asked about these wild market gyrations we've seen all week and again today. Here's what the press secretary had to say.
Most of the market indexes, indices closed somewhat higher yesterday, and now they're down again today. Obviously, these are market movements that are closely watched at the Treasury Department. They watch financial markets all around the world and are carefully evaluating what sort of impact they could have on the broader economy here in the United States. I don't know that the president's necessarily been briefed on today's movements at all.
Kayla Earnest went on to say that the president has laid out a number of economic improvement measures, including as recently as the State of the Union. He encouraged Congress to join with the president on some of those. So that was a little bit politically self-serving from the White House podium there. But the White House doesn't really like to comment on market moves generally. They typically say markets go up, markets go down. So this was a little bit unusual for the White House to talk directly about market movements. But they said, of course, they're not aware that the president has been briefed as of.
Okay, I just thought that's interesting to note that that the White House has actually reacted to this. Again, you know, this is unusual, and there are so many indicators, if you consider all the points made in that article I was just reading, combined with the oil credit crisis as the price of oil plummets to below $30 a barrel, and potential collapse that could occur in the oil and gas industry, partly due to having invested in resources which are no longer needed, like very, very complex and difficult extraction methods of shale oil, and the massive loans that may have been raised in order to do all that, which now possibly cannot be paid back. And, of course, that will then have a rebound effect back on the general economy. And then we have this problem of housing prices having gone up again with massive leverage. And there is no really good pretext for housing prices having risen to the level they have. And this especially applies in Australia. And people are not able to raise the money to make payments on houses, regardless of whether interest rates are low, because everything's become too expensive. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we are going to break. We will be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Now, just continuing from a topic in the last segment there, I just want to reflect and give my thoughts on what is really happening here. Of course, there's a lot of analysis and there's a lot of doom and gloom being predicted. And of course, many people see this as an engineered situation, see it as a collapse by design, and they see an end goal or an end game, as it's sometimes called, to kind of destroy modern civilization, to bring in a kind of feudal totalitarian new world order. And it's totally understandable to feel that this is that this is kind of like an end game goal. But I think it's actually not. I don't think that that is a. I think that is a fear that is constantly going to be there, and it's constantly in the minds of people who. We look at the history of the world. We look at our literature and the predictions of great writers and thinkers who've said that that at some point in the future, the Western world is going to devolve into some new and darker evil form of totalitarianism. But I think it's actually off the mark, and I think it's a distraction in some ways. I think what is really happening is that we are just in a cycle, a manipulated cycle of booms and busts, and fears are certainly being used as part of this manipulated cycle. And it's mainly, you know, the fear of loss and the need to kind of people's basic fears in life about wanting to protect themselves, build a nest, and therefore involve themselves in a system which is fundamentally rigged and corrupt. And I can see this just going on indefinitely. And those who fear that we will devolve into some endpoint game will continue to, you know, talk their gloom and doom, and other people will. Who are embedded in the system will look at them and say, well, look, you know, you're full of it. It hasn't happened. You keep saying it never happens. And therefore, they feel actually more confident about their position when they see the people who are extremely negative, that their predictions never really come true. Of course, we've had major recessions. We had a big recession in 2008. But, you know, it didn't lead to the dark totalitarian outcomes that were being predicted at that time. But things are deteriorating in many ways, and I've been very, you know, loud and talking about it on this show, and I think we, the people, need to take whatever measures are necessary to restore the broken aspects of democracy everywhere in the world. We really need to do that. But I think we need to let go of the meme of the inevitable slow slide towards a George Orwell type scenario. We need to let go of that, and we need to realize that we are actually being played, and that this boom and bust cycle has been intrinsic to capitalism since the 19th century. The peaks and the troughs are getting bigger, right? But in some ways, the negative effects of what has happened with these economic crises are less. I mean, you're not seeing people starving to death. You're not seeing people suffering from severe malnutrition in the recent recessions, in the 2008 recession. It didn't lead to the type of suffering that we saw in the Great Depression of the 1930s. And again, I'm very keen on keeping our eye on the real crisis and the real threats to freedom and the real evil that is being perpetrated in our society. But in some ways, the fear that we have that something terrible will happen is actually part of the way we are controlled. And I just think we should reflect on that. And I'd just like you to consider what I'm saying for a moment, is that your constant fear that we are reaching an end point where everything is going to change is something that does not empower you. Because it's like you're watching a tsunami come up over the horizon, and you know that you can't outrun it. And when you see a tsunami coming and you know you can't outrun it, people typically, and I've watched a lot of videos of this on the internet, it's quite interesting actually, it's an interesting analogy. When people see tsunamis coming, they typically just stand there and stare at it, because psychologically you can't grapple with it and you don't really fully understand it. And so the tsunami of a giant collapse is actually something that keeps people kind of paralyzed. And I believe people have been sort of paralyzed over and over again. And I believe this is kind of by design. This is been engineered. We're constantly paralyzed by fears. And it's not just about economic collapse. It's about nuclear holocaust. It's about climate change. You know, it's we're constantly being given things to be terribly, terribly scared of. And these things that we're supposed to be terribly scared of actually limit the range of our actions in the real world. You know, we need to loosen up. We need to be free to understand that it's a big planet, okay? And it's been around for a long time, and there's a lot going on. We've got vast amount of resources, vast amounts of food. We have water. We have sunshine. We have a wonderful planet that is a fantastic place to live. So what I feel is needed is for those of us who are awakened to the deeper realities and understand the manipulations, understand the collapse by design, we also need to understand that there are individuals within the system who are actually benefiting from every time there's a collapse. A lot of people benefit from it. And, you know, they short sell on the way down. They buy up stocks when stocks are down, and then they sell again. And they do this repeatedly over and over again because these individuals, by virtue of a totally corrupt system, are able to manipulate it to their own advantage and to continually profit from it. They profit from it when it goes down. They profit from it when it goes up. And we need to let go of the idea that this is leading to some end point. It's not. They want it to go on like this indefinitely because that's how they make their money. And they're quite happy for us to be so scared that we think something terrible is going to happen soon, because that actually empowers them even more. We need to fix the system. We need to take action, and we need to fix all the problems that have developed as power has become more and more concentrated in a corrupt, narcissistic, psychopathic elite. And in this year coming, I think it's quite likely there will be another collapse, and I do believe it will possibly be worse than 2008. But will it be the trigger for an Alex Jones-style meltdown of civilization? Not at all. I really don't think that's going to happen. And I'm quite willing to say that I think that's just a false prediction. And it is part of a meme that is actually obstructing growth, obstructing awareness. So I'm very keen to know what your thoughts are on this. And if you want to send me an email, I will talk about whatever you have to send me and possibly get some people on the show to talk about it. Because I do think that it is time now to really start reversing the psychological mechanism we have when we fear disaster all the time. With Truth News Radio Australia, we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Okay, back to vaccinations. Favorite topic on this show. And it's a topic that I continually return to because it is one that the mainstream media, and particularly the Murdoch empire, decides to continually return to for the purpose of pushing propaganda and vilifying people who have a different viewpoint on health and how we might stay healthy, a viewpoint that does not include the use of injections to stimulate the immune system, people who believe that it is possible to stay healthy through eating the right food, exercise, lifestyle, and who have a different perspective on the nature of disease itself, rather than seeing disease pathogens as some terrible enemy to be feared. There are many in our society and around the world who see infectious illness as more like a trigger that allows the body to eliminate toxic buildups, and that therefore people who are in a state of toxicity are more likely to get sick, and the best way therefore to prevent illness is to eliminate or prevent the buildup of toxicity in the first place. Now this whole viewpoint of health, it's an integrated, holistic way of living, and it is greatly despised by the corporatist medical industry, the medical industrial complex, because when you adopt this perspective, you remove yourself from the province that they control. You basically take back your ownership of who you are, rather than being in a state where you see yourself as a purely vulnerable kind of organic entity that can be attacked by these microbes that can just enter your body and make you very sick or kill you, and that your only defense against that is these highly expensive government mandated or government subsidized solutions, right, which you as a mere individual would never be able to come up with, because it takes billions of dollars of research, right, to come up with these expensive medicines and vaccines, right? But because you adopt the model, their model that they've given to you, of you being this kind of completely vulnerable, helpless individual, wading through a sea of pathogens, and it is only the government and the big corporations that can protect you from these. You see, it's very important that you continue to believe that. Your fear is very important to them. Again, this relates back to what I was saying in the previous segment about the financial crash. Your fear that something terrible is going to happen unless they protect you is actually essential to the whole scam working. So what they hate most is people who take the ownership back and have a new model of the self, a new model of what it means to be healthy, a new model of what it means to be ill. And mainstream media, which is an arm of the shadow government, as Edward Bernays described it, which gives us the views and the thoughts that we need to live our lives and does our thinking for us, the mainstream media has a constant need to steer people back into the direction of believing that they are helpless and utterly dependent on the vast edifice of the corporate medical industrial complex to protect them from these terrible, terrible dangers. And I'll play to you now a video from heraldsun.com.au. They're putting this stuff out constantly now. There's dozens of articles going out every week. Most of them, thankfully, are inaccessible due to the paywall, and that's actually a really good thing because it means most people won't actually be able to read this rubbish that's posted online. I've actually got one of the articles up here. I don't actually have an account with Herald Sun, but it allows you to open them occasionally. And the title of this article is Vaccination Myths Busted, No Credible Scientific Evidence Against Vaccination. Now, they're sort of trying to use the agitprop video method that skeptics and activists use in reverse. They're sort of using this method to try and scare you back into taking vaccines. And there's a bunch of other articles linked here which have been published recently. Outrageous anti-vaxxers tear down hospital posters. You know, they're basically also promoting the meme that anti-vaxxers are this kind of rabid, feral element within our society who are really, they're sort of people that you don't want to be associated with. And heaven forbid that you would ever be tarnished with that label of being an anti-vaxxer, because it means you're some kind of rabid, feral individual who just runs around creating havoc. This, again, is part of their propaganda, is what they're trying to do. They're trying to, it's a total package, you see. They're not just trying to, you know, convince you through information, be it false or true. They're not just trying to tell you that vaccines are good for you. They're not just trying to say that the arguments of the anti-vaccine lobby are false. They're trying to create a total picture of those who see differently as being an element of society that must be discarded and suppressed, ultimately, you know, extinguished, hopefully. That's the meme that they are trying to create. I think it's failing. But here I'm going to play to you the recent video here from heraldsun.com.au, Vaccination Myths Busted. Here we go.
Can misinformation kill? When it comes to vaccinations, most definitely. It's time to take a look at some of those anti-vaccination myths. Perhaps the most enduring myth about vaccinations is a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. It all originated from a 1998 paper published in the British medical journal The Lancet by surgeon and medical researcher Andrew Wakefield. Wakefield claimed a link between the vaccine that protects against measles, mumps and rubella, or MMR, and the incidence of autism. The paper has since been discredited, retracted and described as fraudulent. We now know that Wakefield had several undeclared conflicts of interest and he manipulated the data. Extensive independent tests have failed to replicate the results or show any links between the vaccine and autism. It's also been claimed that vaccines contain all kinds of toxins, including mercury. The mercury myth stems from the use of the preservative thimerosal in some vaccines. Thimerosal does contain mercury, but the dose in a vaccine is so low that extensive testing has shown that it's not considered harmful. But just to be sure, it was removed from the production of all childhood vaccines in Australia in 2000. So there is no mercury in any modern vaccines given to children. The National Centre for Immunisation Research and Surveillance lists 16 diseases that are vaccine preventable and notes that in recent years they have been increasing in Australia as more people choose not to have their children immunised. This has led to several deaths. And now, four fast facts that counter anti-vaccination myths. The eradication of smallpox and polio does not mean that we can stop vaccinating for them. No vaccination is 100% effective. A vaccinated person is actually more likely to catch the disease, but the effects will be much less. Vaccines do not weaken or overwhelm the immune system. They actually strengthen it. And vaccines are not unnatural. They work by stimulating the body's immune system using naturally occurring agents. Want to find out more about anti-vaccination myths? Check out our website where we've got some links.
We're just going to break. I was just playing to you there's some propaganda from the Murdoch Empire, the Australian arm of the Murdoch Empire, trying to scare you back into believing in the lies of the medical industrial complex. I'll have more commentary on that when we come back. You're at Truth News Radio.
Happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point, they...
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Now, some points to make about that little clip I just played in the last segment. I think it's interesting to note that the propaganda efforts against vaccine skeptics always bring up Andrew Wakefield. When in fact there are so many other topics, so many other sources of information, so many other individuals that have been involved in this, and yet they always bring up Andrew Wakefield and they always describe his study as fraudulent. And this of course is itself fraudulent. This is actually a deliberate lie that is injected into the media coverage of Andrew Wakefield every time his name is mentioned. And it's a little reminiscent of what they do with Julian Assange when they say that he's been charged with rape. You know, they just say, oh, he's been charged with rape. Well, actually, he's never been charged with anything. And what the allegations are against Julian Assange have nothing to do with rape in the commonly understood sense of the word. But they just say, oh, he's been charged with rape. And the same with Andrew Wakefield. They say that his research was found to be fraudulent. Well, you know, I've been over this many times on this show, and I've taken the time to really look into it and look into all the facts in detail about why his license was revoked. And there was not one mention in any of the findings against him about fraud, about misrepresenting results. None at all. The charges against him were on the level of medical ethics, which is a very murky, a very grey kind of area, and had to do with the way in which the research was being conducted. But the Murdoch Empire does not care about facts. They simply don't care. Yes, he was found to have done something wrong. So they feel that they can then extend that, they can just extrapolate from that to say that his research was fraudulent. Of course, that was the end goal in the whole process behind his political persecution and the retraction of his article, which was published in The Lancet, which, by the way, did not state that there was a clear link between autism and vaccines. It merely stated that more research was needed. And again, another just blatant lie in that video that I played for you is that there has been no further research. Well, there has been volumes of further research and from many different angles. And I will provide links to that on the website that does indeed show connections between autism and vaccines. There needs to be more. There needs to be more focus put on it. But there has been continuing research which shows connections between vaccines and autism. And there have been billions of dollars in payouts, many of which are related to children who have developed autism spectrum disorder after receiving vaccines. So for that video to have stated that there is no evidence whatsoever, nothing has ever been shown, just this one man, Andrew Wakefield, who was found to have been a liar and a scammer, you know, was found to have been fraudulent, they're just painting a picture. They're just telling a story, telling a tale that is completely false, completely designed to induce loathing and disgust in the audience. And your loathing and disgust for the way in which this this unprincipled medical researcher led people astray, you know, created a terrible furore, and it was all just done for his personal profit. Again, they want to turn this into a moral issue. They really want to use whatever hooks they can to get into you, to make you not only believe what they're saying, but to hate the people who have something different to say. Now, this article here from the Herald Sun is quite long, and it's actually got another section here where it says, there is no debate. And this is another technique, of course, which is used. And, of course, we've seen it used in climate change as well. There is no debate. Sorry. If you think there's a debate, then you're just delusional. You're probably paranoid. In fact, there is no debate. And all those people who are making noise, they're not really people. They don't even exist. It's all just in your mind. If you're thinking about it, it's just in your imagination. There's no debate at all. None. None whatsoever. That's exactly the tone of this article. Big headline here in the article. There is no debate. How myths are being peddled to avoid no jab, no pay, or no play laws. And remember, it's no jab, no pay, and no play. Childcare centres have been given the power to prevent children from enrolling who have not been vaccinated, in addition to the government withdrawing its tax subsidies for families who do not have their children fully vaccinated according to the schedule up to age 19. And this, of course, is done under the pretext of the greater good argument, which, again, is the final resort, the last resort of scoundrels. It is really a disgusting, evil, psychological meme which is used to control people. And, you know, it's been used by tyrants from time immemorial. You know, the greater good, you have to sacrifice. You have to understand the greater good. You have to relegate yourself to the interests of the collective. And this is the way Mao Zedong engineered the Cultural Revolution. This is a technique of brainwashing, and it is very, very effective. So what do we have here under there is no debate? We answer common anti-vaccination claims. Yes. Well, of course, when we see the Murdoch Empire lackeys refuting myths, you know that they're going to sort of bring straw men into this argument. They're going to assert that this is what the vaccine skeptics say, and then they're going to refute what they say. So here's the first myth that they bring up. The body's immune system can cope with infection without the help of vaccines. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? The body's immune system can cope with infection without the help of vaccines. Okay, and here's what they counter as the fact to that myth. The immune system is a collection of specialized cells and chemicals that fight infection. Each time a bacterium, fungus, or germ is overcome, the immune system remembers how to defeat that infection. If the immune system comes into contact with that particular germ again, it can quickly destroy it, often before symptoms are even noticed. Without causing infection, vaccines trick the immune system into responding as if the body is under attack from a specific bacterium or virus by introducing dead or weakened versions of the germ, inactivated toxins from germs, or molecules from the surface of the germ. If the immune system encounters the live germ or toxin later, the immune system quickly recognizes it and kills it. Well, there you go. That's your fact to refute the myth. To be honest with you, what they're presenting as a myth, the body's immune system can cope with infection without the help of vaccines, is not actually countered by that fact at all. I thought they would probably use a more clear straw man type of statement. But in fact, what they've done is they've really shot themselves in the foot, because they haven't actually refuted the fact that the immune system can cope with infection without the help of vaccines, even by their own argument. If you already have infection, if you've had previous infections, then of course the body's immune system can cope with infection without vaccines. It's even acknowledged here. This is extremely poorly written. Myth number two, the immune systems of babies are protected through the placenta and breastfeeding, so they don't need vaccinations. Fact. Babies are exposed to many germs as part of the normal birthing process, including those from the vaginal canal, feces, and breast milk. Although their immune systems can meet these challenges, the immune system in an infant is still developing and needs to become active to protect against a range of bacteria and viruses. An infant will receive some natural protection against diseases transferred from the placenta, but the level of protection depends on the mother's exposure to disease, either by illness or vaccination. Breast milk is also valuable for protection, but the protection is mainly for germs that infect the gut. The protection received from the placenta and breast milk can be weak and only lasts for a few months. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? The protection from placenta and breast milk can be weak and only lasts for a few months. You realise that breastfeeding in the West has actually been reduced from an average of 2 years in most non-industrialised societies to 3 months. Anyway, that's a whole other story. We're at the end of the show. I didn't have time to read all these myths and facts. I will be back next week. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's been great talking to you today. See you next week.